My name is Hal Walker. I've been married twice to two different women and never divorced.
I married a two-timer.
Go ahead, Beth. And that'll mean a little bit more after we get going here, so.
I was born in the biggest little town in Texas. Freona has one of the longest grain elevators, and there, a cow with no legs is called ground beef. They say you can smell money when you get close to town. Our family, that's where horny toads and tumbleweeds were at, if you ever heard about horny toads. We moved to Arkansas when I was about 8, and we joined a little church nearby. My daddy and mom sang in the choir. He played the harmonica. My brother and I went every Sunday and Wednesday night. We had to wear our Sunday go-to-meeting clothes. The Baptist church. We looked like a real normal, healthy Christian family, but behind closed doors was some pain, fear, and confusion. My mom was obedient in keeping her wedding vows. Her steadfast faith and love held our family together and still does. When the church had a revival, they sang the song, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Are you familiar with that? The Lord opened my heart when those words came. Have we trials and temptations? Is there trouble anywhere? We should never be discouraged. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Can we find a friend so faithful who will all our sorrows share? In his arms he will take and shield thee. Thou wilt find a solace there. So my heart began to ache when that song played. I needed that unconditional, loving, forever friend. So I asked Jesus to be my forever friend, and I loved him and turned my life to live for him. I had a new godly father I could trust and obey. He turned my life around from self-pity and shame to a person loved deeply by the Creator. I had a new identity. His spirit was now in my body. I was joyful that he was part of it, in it, gave it a new purpose for the pain. Later in school, I'd pray, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, right before the starting gun would go off in track. We set school records that lasted for years. So my self-esteem and confidence was growing through that relationship with Christ. I was even brave enough to do a Dolly Parton pantomime for the Miss BHS high school pageant. Footballs in the front and a blonde wig. I say, here we go again, losing my balance. That was crazy. Mom and I were really tight. She's my best friend. She had a great sense of humor. So I won Miss Congeniality with that. That was a lot of fun. I met this big, old, tall, good-looking man my senior year. He was playing basketball. He was awesome.
See the white tie? The other thing I want you to note is the bangs. With this curly hair, I had to stick a Six Flags Over Texas hat on there when it was wet because they would not stay down. So I had a little rain trough right there. But anyway, I was born and raised in Winfield, Kansas. Back in the old days, which was, it wasn't quite a farming community, but my family was from farming communities around central Kansas. Went through high school there, was a big basketball player and homecoming king and all that stuff, and went to Kansas University for a couple years, and there I became an idiot. kind of found out about all the things that you're not supposed to do. The long and the short of it is, Mom and Dad moved down to Bella Vista, Arkansas in 76, I believe. And I wasn't getting anywhere, and I knew I wanted to kind of straighten up and try to figure life out. I wasn't a Christian at that time at all. We had, gone to church, but I had no relationship with him, had no idea what a relationship meant. And moved down here after Mom and Dad built their house and tried to straighten up. And we were kind of, I was lonely because I was down here all by myself. I had two brothers left in Kansas, one in Wichita, one in Kansas City. Kind of started wandering around Walmart, which is a novel idea, isn't it? But anyway, I saw this cute little blonde. And I didn't think too much about it, except she was cute. And so the next time I went, there she was again. And this time I decided to go down the aisle and make a right and come down that other aisle and look at her again. So so we kind of met up there and took her out a few times.
You finally got my phone number, didn't you?
Yeah. And then long and the short of it is we dated about 2 years. She decided to go to John Brown. She had gotten a volleyball scholarship.
Because short players can get to the floor faster than the giants at the net. I was called a digger.
If you look at the elevation there, that is not a standard net. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, she had gone to school over there, and I was building. I had actually built a church out in Bella Vista, Arkansas, that we ended up getting married in. And then I was building a church over in Decatur, Arkansas, and Beth was going to school at John Brown. And I kept following her over there. I would get done building and then go down there and visit her at Mayfield Dorm. If anybody is from John Brown, they know what Mayfield is. That was one of the original women's dormitory over there. And then we decided that we kind of liked each other, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
This would have been 1982.
I began feeling a conviction, though, that I was no longer in the Lord's will by dating this boy. I'd only been sprinkled as a baby. He was 12 inches shy of his salvation. 2 Corinthians says, "Do not be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness?" So I prayed that night, "Oh Lord, it's your will that all things work together for good," he told me in my heart. So how we went to I thought was going to be our last date, wasn't it?
Basically, she told me that we couldn't date anymore because, we were not of the same mind. Well, I was curious because I had seen how happy she was and how her life, and I didn't know any of her past. How her life had just kind of meant something. And I was looking for something like that because I had been kind of wandering around in the clouds and hadn't figured anything out yet. So that night was November 4th, 1980. And we were at a movie theater. And before we had gone in, she basically gave me the ultimatum. And I said, I'm ready. And so I accepted the Lord right there in that car. And that car floated. When people talk about having an experience, I had an experience that night. It was something I'll never forget. So then we decided that I would go back to school over at John Brown. So I became a Christian November 4th, 1980, and then started school January 1981.
Mm-hmm. He took a lot of Bible classes, so he caught up real quick.
So here I had already had 4 years of college because I'd had 2 years at JUCO and 2 years at KU, and now I got to take 12 hours of Bible as a brand new Christian. So I learned a lot quickly, and I met some really good friends that helped me understand things and get through that.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to get married.
It took 2 years.
Yeah. I don't think we kissed for two years either.
I think it was on the proposal night.
So anyway, we got married August 21st, 1982, in the church that I'd built up in Bella Vista, Arkansas. It's kind of a neat deal. So anyway, for the next 10 years, Beth was coaching. She'd started out at Shiloh Christian School with a guy named Jeff Barker. And then she went to Old High Elementary. And you coached several different sports there.
Shiloh Christian School.
You were at Shiloh for a year and then went to Old High Elementary and mm-hmm. coached there. And in the meantime, I was building geodesic dome houses and I was traveling all over the Midwest. So for 10 years, we kind of were running around different directions, but we had gotten a common interest with what Beth likes to call fur babies.
We started showing golden retrievers. We showed them, trained them, and bred them. And grandparents were getting so tired of having nothing but fur babies for a while. But we had a lot of fun, didn't we?
Yeah. So the picture shows a little girl in my arms. And you want to speak to that, Beth.
Yeah, we finally had a little baby girl. But we've been telling the folks we're going to be good parents because after you've trained a dog to come sit down, good girl. You're just going to be an obedient child, right?
Sit, stay. Yeah. So we've convinced the grandparents that we're going to be really good parents. So So here's a picture of Beth showing off what we bought, and I'm showing off what we bred. So.
You hardly got to hold her the first year.
First year, I didn't hold her at all. And because we lived two houses down from Beth's mother, who was there all the time, and then about 7 miles from my folks. And I kind of liked her, kind of wanted to hold her, but I didn't get to at all. So, I'm sorry?
There's a picture of our grandparents.
Holding on to her. There's the grandparents holding on to her.
She got 12 dresses one Christmas from one grandparent. Only granddaughter on both sides of the family.
And then right after we had her, she wasn't quite a year old. I got transferred. I was actually working for Cooper Communities out in Bella Vista, Arkansas, working for the developer. And they actually sent us over to East Tennessee, a place called Teleco, which is just not too far from Knoxville, Tennessee. And we had gotten over there, and that's where she got the dresses, because if you guys have ever been over there, Pigeon Forge Gatlinburg is right next door. So there is fufu dresses lined up for miles there. So when we went over there, kind of an interesting story. I'll tell you a real quick one. When we found Fellowship Church, Jim Walters and Jim Arkins, I don't know if you guys know Jim Arkins. Jim was one of the founders of the church. He was Beth's doctor. And both of them told us that there was a new church starting up, and it was called Fellowship, and it was meeting over here at Seventh-day Adventist Church. So we went over there, and we started going, and then they decided to move to Oakdale Junior High. So we got involved with that and setting up chairs on Sunday morning, breaking them down afterwards. Well, when I got transferred to East Tennessee, a good friend, a guy named Randy Bell, if some of you may know him, told us about a friend that he had over in Knoxville, Tennessee, that had a church very similar to this one, called Fellowship Evangelical Free, and they were setting up in a junior high school. So we decided to go there, and so for about a year, we set up in the junior high. They graduated to a high school, but here we are, a fledgling new congregation trying to find their way. And then they ended up building a church, very big church. And then I'll finish part of that story here after a while because it gets interesting one more time. I had built a brand new house, and we had moved in October 6th. And October 10th, we had invited some friends over. This will kind of date us. We had a video called Jurassic Park on VHS, just come out. So that kind of dates us.
Those things give me nightmares, scary movies. Yeah. I got a headache that night. I left the room, but I didn't come back.
We invited some friends over to watch the movie, and I told them to hold for a second because Beth had been in the bedroom for several minutes. So my daughter was 2 years old, and like I say, we'd built the house October 6th. This was October 10th, which happened to be my birthday. And I walked in there, and Beth was laying on the floor in a fetal position and holding her head. And she had really just all kinds of pain. She was just writhing in pain, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I told Jay and Karen to take care of Jordan real quick. I was going to run her to the hospital. So I took her to the hospital, and they had a waiting room, emergency room, just full of people. And everybody was saying, take her, because Beth was just in all kinds of pain. Got her in there, and she had 104 degree temperature, and it fluctuated between 104 and 106. And they said, well, we think it's spinal meningitis, which spinal meningitis is kind of an oxymoron. It's meningitis. But they did a spinal tap and found all kind of white corpuscles in her spinal cord. And they said, well, we think it's meningitis, but it could be encephalitis, and you don't want that. And I said, what is that? And they said, well, you don't want that. So she went into an isolation room, and she was in there for about 4 days, and then she started seizing real badly.
And I was in a coma and on life support,
so,
right?
Right after the mm-hmm. seizure, they put her in intensive care and then put her in a isolation room there, and she went into a coma. And then they knew right then what had happened, and it was what they call viral encephalitis, the one that gives you cold sores, chicken pox, shingles. Well, it lays in the nerves that service your mouth, so instead of coming out, it went in. So she had shingles basically on her brain, and that caused her brain to swell. And that's when she went into the coma. So we had kind of a hard time with that. My daughter's 2 years old. My wife is in intensive care, and I've got a brand new house, and we hadn't even unpacked anything yet. Well, our small group came to the rescue. They came down to the hospital and sat with me. My parents had turned around and come back after helping us move in.
And mine had too.
Yeah, and hers did too, to stay with Jordan. And then her mother came up to the hospital to stay with us. And anyway, the small group prayed and prayed and prayed, and they asking questions and just supported me in any way that they could, which is kind of hard to describe unless you're in that situation, how valuable that community is.
They told my family after I wasn't, the brain was swelling beyond its capacity, the folds were all gone, and the virus, they figured out, was moving from one side of the brain to the other. Pastor Cupp came and talked to the doctors, Brad Brinson, and left preparing a funeral. They told my family, we're going to have to take out some brain tissue to give him the good side of the brain room to swell and time to find a cure.
We found out that there was 46, maybe 48 states praying for her at that time through all the networking connections. And there was a time when her mother and I had gone down to the chapel and we'd just had enough. And I told God, I said, you gave her to me the first time. If you're going to take her, because I can't handle this anymore. I mean, it was several days. She was on a ventilator and had a quadruple port down her jugular vein, and she just got down to 89 pounds, and I'd had enough. So I told God, if you're going to take her, please take her. I've just had it.
Small group members came in the ICU room before that surgery began. They laid their hands on me and prayed. When the neurosurgeon came back in for pre-op, I had stabilized. Medicine shows God's mercy. Miracles show his power.
Now, what happened when you woke up?
I didn't know who I was or who this handsome boy was or the little girl, but you know what I knew? I had this wonderful feeling in my heart. I was flying like an eagle in that coma with no fear, pain, or confusion. I was so full of joy and peace, I did not want to leave. And you know what? I was remembering my salvation, being baptized at Bethel Missionary Baptist Church, and they say, what a friend we have in Jesus. He's the only one who seemed to know me. But just having that comfort of someone was there, watching my back and with me in that very confusing time of life, I think that is the most awesome part of this story, is remembering my salvation and not knowing my kid or my husband was kind of sad. But so they introduced me to this little guy, this handsome guy, and said, you're married and you have a little girl. And I thought, wow.
If you see that picture and it's kind of blurry, that's kind of the way Beth was seeing things when she came out of the coma. It's kind of blurry. But that is her actual baptism. Of course, through the years, it's gotten kind of blurry. But she remembered her salvation, didn't know me and her daughter or mother or nobody. It was just kind of crazy. So anyway, we had some rehab happening after that.
6 months.
And
that new little girl of his turned out to be one of the best physical therapists ever.
Yeah, she ended up going to the Patricia Neal Rehab Center. And Patricia Neal was an actress, and she had had several strokes. And this was a brain injury day treatment program. And so I hadn't let Jordan see Mom at all because she had this all this contraption on her, and I didn't want it to scare her. So now Jordan is the hero because she's pushing Mom around, and she's also feeding her. So
she couldn't see where she was going when she's pushing my wheelchair, so I had to get on my own 2 feet rather quickly, or we were going to get them broken. She wasn't too good about getting food in her own mouth, so I had to swallow her down.
So anyway, through the year there, that first year, she got out May the 5th. So she was in from October 10th, 94 to May the 5th, 1995, in either the hospital or in rehab. And when she got out, she didn't really like me. One of the first things she said was, "Did I like you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, one time you kind of liked me." And then she goes, "Well, what's a husband?" And I was like, then I knew I was in trouble. So
marriage?
Yeah, so I had to kind of wine and dine her and get her to like me again, which was not that easy because now I'm a kind of an old fuddy-duddy and been through all this stuff. And anyway, she decided she wanted to get married again to make some new memories because, honest to goodness, it was 12 years when she got sick. So we decided on our 15th anniversary to renew our vows.
I came to his first wife's house. I was wearing her stuff. I didn't care for her colors or nothing. It was rather weird. You can imagine. So I had to have my own reality check here.
She came into her closet and she goes, "Whose clothes are these?" I said, "Well, those are yours." And she goes, "I don't like them." I was like, "Give me your credit card."
I wasn't driving, though.
But she is wearing my first wife's dress right here. Of course, I'm not wearing the same suit.
I even had her ring. But on the wedding day, he gave me my own ring.
So now, married twice to two different women, never divorced, makes sense. And I am a two-timer.
She's been married twice.
A couple of months ago, we celebrated our 37th anniversary. Of course, hers is 22.
I'm still a newlywed.
But there's a few things I want to say. We're going to run a little long here, and I'm going to try to kind of wrap it up here. There's some things that happened to us through the years that really made us kind of focus in on what had happened to us, and that was, you know, when you get through several years of marriage, you know, you're not the same person anyway. So when I make the joke about two different women, we're all different than the person we married. I've got about 100 pounds that I didn't have. And there's a thing that really I struggled with, and that was, you know, here I've got a brand new daughter, a brand new house. Everything's going great, got a new job, and all of a sudden my whole world fell apart. And I really just wasn't sure I liked that whole situation. And we had made a commitment, of course, through the original vows, and then we had recommitted through the second vow. So I was really upset, though, about the whole thing. And I don't want to do all talking here, Beth, but I had a real struggle with God. I was very mad that he could let this happen to me. And it was, I'm this, I'm that. I mean, I'm unhappy, and I've got this, and my daughter doesn't know her mom, and just on and on it went. And one day God kind of drug me aside and said, "You know what, it's not about you." And that was probably the most profound thing that I had ever heard him say to me. And he had said some things through the years, but when he said, "Hal, it's not about you, it's about me," then I realized what the commitment was, which was a commitment to God first, commitment to the marriage, and then a commitment to my wife.
And I guess God has said that he's had to be really faithful because God's given him strength to put up with a dizzy blonde because cephalitis ate the frontal lobe of my brain, which is visual and short-term memory. So today's gone tomorrow, and I've lost a dozen phones.
We have a cure for one of the issues with the phones, and I'll show you something real quick. This is Beth's ringtone.
Phone.
And I'll tell you a little story. We've probably lost, what, 12 phones? Maybe 8 or 9 sets of keys, 5 or 6 purses.
You can have 12 keys made on your car.
Yeah, pretty soon then they say, and several driver's licenses. But if you remember in the old days when this happened, there was no cell phone and no GPS. So I'll tell you another story. She got in the car one day and took off and got 200 miles away from home. And I had one of my buddies call me. He was on vacation, a place called Jellicoe Mountain, which is up by Virginia. He said, "I think I just saw your wife." And, of course, he's at a 7-Eleven because there was no cell phone. And I said, "What kind of van was it?" And he said, "It was a little Plymouth Voyager." I said, "Uh-oh, would you go stop her and bring her back to the 7-Eleven?" And I got in the car and went up there and got her. So in those days, that was one set of challenges. Mm-hmm. Now it's, you know, losing a phone and losing the keys and a purse, that's mild compared to losing a wife and a car.
Yeah. Of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most.
Yeah, so one of the things that really, I want to share one scripture for everybody, but I challenge everybody to have that time with God where he has that, that it's not about you, it's about me kind of a situation. And this one right here, if my phone would come on, is one of the verses that I claimed. Technology. You've got the Bible on here too. So anyway, we struggled. We still do today. We struggle with all kinds of opportunities. I challenge anybody to lose a phone and have a discussion and then 20 minutes later have the same discussion. And if I didn't have a relationship with God, I would go crazy because it's not Beth's fault. It's what the disease had left her. And this is one of the sweetest little ladies you'll ever meet. And anybody that knows her knows that. But Romans 11:33 says, "Oh, the depth of the riches and the wisdom of the knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways beyond finding out." And that, you know, when things happen to us and we just don't feel right and what did we do, God always has some reason for things. And, you know, when I get up there, I'm going to discuss some of them. But but honestly, when I figured out that it wasn't about me and it was about him, now what we've realized through our opportunities to share what has happened to us is that God has a plan for us also.
A purpose for the pain.
And Jimmy had said something about our family life. We've been to, I think, either 12 or 13 conferences. And, you know, they'll get an alumni group and they'll say, "How many have you been to?" And I'll go, 13. And then he'll go, "Oh," and I'll go, "We can't get it right." But we enjoy going to that. And when Re-Engage came around, we thought, "Oh, this is an opportunity to do the same." And we just really enjoy it. So
they interviewed us, Family Life did, when they found out I didn't remember going to any of them one time. If you Googled, she didn't know she was married. It's our story's on there. Yeah.
Well, we want to thank you guys for giving us a chance to share.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks, Beth and Hal. Appreciate you guys sharing your story with us. Hey, there's a book that recently came out that I started making my way through called The Meaning of Marriage, Facing the Complexities of Commitment with the Wisdom of God. It's by Tim Keller. And I shared a little snippet of a quote about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And I want to read the context of that quote here. It's, when over the years, someone has seen you at your worst and knows you with all your strengths and flaws, yet commits himself or herself to you wholly, it is a consummate experience. To be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. You guys have faced some difficulties through the years, and you've relied on the Lord's strength. And marriage is hard. Marriage is wonderful. To be known and loved in spite of our flaws is something that it reflects the love of God. And so tonight, we just want to thank you for sharing part of your story with us. And anyone else encouraged in the room tonight by their story? Thank you, guys. Yeah. Hey, we're going to go ahead and break in just a couple minutes for our small group time. But first, I also want to acknowledge there's some couples that come every week to prepare the snacks and drinks for everybody here. And Kathy and Greg Rush are back there tonight. Would you guys thank them? Thank you, Kathy and Greg. Also, for all our small group leaders in the past, I've put your little caddy things with the rosters and other information. They've been in your rooms. I've actually set them on the counter on the other side of the kitchen. So be sure to go grab those on your way up to your room. Hey, you guys are dismissed for your small group time. We'll see you.